Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Jr. recording, broadcasting live from Chicago. I'm glad you're there. Glad you're out there. There's going to be a little change in my format today because of the death of the great B.B. King. And it's not a laughing matter because the guy was great. He was super. But one of the things I like about B.B. King was his style. And his style was copied by so many other artists out there, and a lot of these artists went on to make a lot more money than he ever did being a performer, even though they copied him, but they made a lot more money. They got richer copying his style than he did, but a lot of them actually, they loved the guy. They really loved the guy. We all love the guy. I was raised on B.B. King, not being totally a blues man myself, but I was kind of raised up on it. I knew his music growing up, and we loved it. We loved it, even though I always try to be diverse in what I listen to. I like blues, jazz, pop, some pop. You know, I'm always diversified. It's easy listening, Frank Sinatra, even Johnny Mathis. I love these easy listening songs. It depends on what mood I'm in, that for whatever comes. Music I might be listening to. I have to be in a certain mood. But B.B. King, I'm going to be talking about B.B. King in and out, you know, during this show, because he was a great musician, and I think he deserves that much because he's brought us so much. He changed the landscape of blues music, actually. Basically, every blues musician out there will probably tell you that they were influenced some way by B.B. King. You know, because from my understanding, B.B. King was a nice and gentle guy. And I'm just learning that B.B. King, his doctor in the coroner's office in Las Vegas, said that the guy passed away actually in his sleep from a series of small strokes attributed to his longstanding battle with type 2 diabetes. So, and basically they're saying that he was totally exhausted, he was tired. You know, I mean, at 89, in my own opinion, I actually think that B.B. King probably should have retired maybe back in his 70s or something like that, because after 80, you know, you have to give the road up, I would think, you know. But he was a music man. He wanted to keep doing it. He didn't want to stay home. I guess, you know, he wanted to keep doing it, and he did it. He did it until he passed away. And I would like to remind everybody that you hear the startup audio for my show is a blues song, but that has nothing to do with the death of B.B. King. It was the startup. That particular piece of audio was selected way before anything about the announcement of the death of B.B. King. And actually, that is not a riff of B.B. King. So it has nothing to do with B.B. King. It's just that I'm a blues lover, because basically I was born in the Delta. B.B. King was also born in the Mississippi Delta, so I guess that gives us something in common. And like I said, in and out today, we're going to be talking about the death of B.B. King because, you know, I mean, he was a musician, I'm a musician, and I think I should give him some time on this show. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I'll be right back in 1 minute. We're going to take a break right here. And we'll be right back. Thank you. Hey, Hey everyone, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm on the Wilder Network. You miss a show here, you miss quite a lot. We always try to have a great show for you. Always wonderful and knowledgeable guests right here whenever I can get them. And even if I'm flying solo, it is always, this show is always fun, it's always exciting, and it's always informative. Once again, welcome to the show. Grab your family, grab your friends, sit back and relax, and let me do all the work. Once again, welcome to the show. Have fun, everyone.
Hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Ah, thank you for that. I'm broadcasting live from Chicago. I'm in my studio, and it is a sunny day. It's a great day. It's a beautiful day. It's in the 80s, I believe. It didn't seem like that starting out earlier in the day in this town, because the weather guys seem to always be getting it wrong, but maybe they got it right this time. I don't know, but it's in the 80s, and it's not so cooler near the lake, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing. Everybody's out and about. Their shorts, the girls are showing off, and, you know, everything is just great. Everything is wonderful, and I feel good, and it's such a positive day outside, and that gives me a more of a positive upbeat. And I love it, and I love it. And I hope it's great where you are, and I hope it's wonderful. I hope it's a nice day where you are. I hope that, you know, things are going okay. If not, then give me a call. Let me know. My number is 347-857-1762 if you have a question or a comment or anything. If not, just sit back and listen to the show and podcast it for later, because I know it is Friday. Everybody don't have time to listen to a radio show on Friday. They're out and about and having fun. But I'm stuck here because I love doing my radio show, okay? And if you want to, you can podcast me anytime you want. And, you know, we'll see where that goes, okay? I'm always, my shows are recorded. They're downloaded. They're free. You can always listen to them. They're all good. They're all good. If it's me, they're good. Like I always say, if you miss a show, you miss a lot. And that's not a, and that's no joke. And that is no joke. I always try to have wonderful and knowledgeable guests on the show. Sometimes I'm flying solo. Even flying solo, it's great. I love it. Great. You know, because I know I'm talking to you out there, and I know you're listening, and I know that you're paying attention, okay? Because there's a lot of radio shows out there, just like there's a lot of authors and writers out there. We just have to kind of like be above all the rest so we can showcase our material, okay? So... This is George Wilder of the George Wilder Jr. Show, and let me say one more time, it's a very, very nice day. I have 8 minutes after 6 p.m. in Chicago, and it might be a little different where you are, but, you know, that's the nature of things, I guess. We're going to be talking to, hopefully we're going to be talking to a young author pretty soon. So let's get started. Let's see what we're going to be talking. Oh, yeah, we're going to be talking about the death of B.B. King. I know I've got a lot of things on the screen. It's domestic abuse on the rise. Obama loses on TPP, which is a good thing for all of us, okay? Knowledge is power. Oh, we're going to get through some of that, but we're going to incorporate some of the things that has happened in the news currently. And they're still talking about this guy who derailed this train. I think it's a deliberate attempt. I think it was deliberate. Like I said in the show yesterday, I think he deliberately crashed this train. Whether he deliberately crashed it or not, I think he's going to really get some serious time, probably for manslaughter, you know. But manslaughter sounds so, it sounds so dramatic. And it's just a lesser charge of murder, you know. So I think he deliberately crashed the train, actually. They don't want to say it. The authorities and the police and all these people, the FBI, they're all on the case. But from what I am gathering and for what I am trying to put together from everything that I'm reading and everything that I've heard and everything about this guy's background, you know, let me specify, allegedly, he could have intentionally crashed the train to kill the people. Just like this guy intentionally ran that airplane into the side of the mountain, the co-pilot. I know you all remember that. You know, so this could be one of those same situations because this was a young guy. He was a young guy. And he just may have, he was the engineer of the train. He may have snapped and said, hey, I'm going to kill everybody. And that train was going 100 miles an hour. I don't know. I'm still trying to put things together on this train thing, you know. Amtrak, you know. My son, he loves trains. He just eat trains if he could. But I guess maybe that's just him being a male in this society. I mean, what little boy doesn't like trains? I don't know where I got that from, but it came from somewhere. But anyway, we're going to have an exciting show today. Stick around. If you can't stick around, I understand why, because it's Saturday, and most people don't want to be cooped up in the house. Because if you can, get out and enjoy this weather. I mean, especially if you're having nice weather somewhere, like we are in the city of Chicago, get out and enjoy this weather. It may not happen again because Chicago's weather is so wacky and wicked out. It could be 80 one day and 30 the next. So get out and enjoy the weather, even if you're just exercising, walking around. You know, just get out and enjoy it. Take your friends, your family, even if you're by yourself, get out there and just enjoy it. It's great. And plus, we're having this great weather during the weekend. Wow. You know, so get out there and enjoy this weather, all right? And you won't regret it. You will not regret it, especially in the city of Chicago. Okay, we're going to take another break. I want you to listen to this, and I will be right back. Right back, and we will be back. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Hey, this is George Wilder Jr., your radio host here. If you are an avid reader or you just love to read in general, check out my Amazon page at www.amazon.com/author/GWilder or pull up the Amazon website and check out all the material that I have produced. Or you can go to Amazon in general and just type my name into the space bar above and all of my material should materialize right in front of your eyes. Wow. Some of the stuff that you can download and check out, Ain't That a Groove? It's action, romance, Back in the Groove, action, romance, Echoes of My Sin, my autobiography, I Got Stung, and a lot of others that you can check out too. I do essays, novels, short stories, and I think I do a good job at them. And you can always go and check those things out and give me some feedback. You know, hook me up with some feedback. I'm always looking for feedback on anything that I do, even on the radio show. Give me feedback on the radio show. What do you think about the radio show? Okay, I got to get back to the radio show. Speaking of radio show, I got to get back. All right. Are you back? Are you back, George? All right, we're back. I'm back. like I said before at the beginning of the start of the show, we're going to be in and out talking about B.B. King because this story is dramatic, and there's a lot of blues legends out there living now that are honoring him. They're giving their take on B.B. King, and that's great. That's great. Okay, Las Vegas, B.B. King believed anyone could play the blues. You know, when I first started playing the guitar, that was one of the things I learned to play was the blues. And we had a little ragtag band at that time and point, and we played the blues. But, you know, over time, we had grown tired. At least I had grown tired of playing cover songs. I wanted to play my own songs. And I didn't want to be identified as a blues player. I wanted to be identified as a musician, period. A musician that played a variety of or genre of songs. So he kind of influenced me also when I was a kid. And his records was always played in the neighborhood, and somebody always had on a blues record by B.B. King. I remember one distinctly song, Don't Knock on the Door or something, I'm Not at Home or something. Or that iconic song, The Thrill Is Gone. You know, and there was another one. He made a lot of them. And they all sounded good because he was a good singer. He was a good writer. He wrote some of his songs. I don't think he wrote all of them, but he wrote some of them. And he's been doing it since 1948. You know, I mean, wow, that's a long time. And throughout the 50s, he was just, wow, he was just a king of the blues. There's nothing to say about that. And he believed anyone could play the blues. And basically, you know, a lot of people thought that the blues were a negative kind of a music. To me, it was never a negative kind of a music. You know, I mean, my baby's gone and she's found another man. I don't think that's a negative kind of music. I think it's blues has always been a slow groove type of music. You know, and that's what I liked about it. It was a slow groove type of music. It was a slowing down of actually rock and roll music. You slowed it down. And it was just jumping. One of my favorite blues guys today is Eric Clapton. You know, I mean, I think he was just awesome. I think they were right when they gave him the title of God. You know, he doesn't think so. But, you know, I mean, if you listen to some of his songs, his older songs, actually Eric Clapton, he's retired from the road, but he's still in the studio making records from what I was reading. So, but B.B. King was even Eric Clapton's idol. But however, Eric Clapton went on to be more famous and to make more money than B.B. King, even though he was influenced by B.B. King. And Eric Clapton also says that he was influenced by Buddy Guy. I think Buddy Guy is a splendid guitar player. I just wish I could have played a guitar like these guys. I'm not too bad. Even today, I'm not that bad, but I could never be as good as B.B. King or Eric Clapton or Buddy Guy or Junior Wells or Junior Walker or Little Milton or Junior Walker. A lot of these people, you know, I could never be as good as they are, but I'm not that bad, okay? So it's sad that they're now saying that B.B. King suffers from dementia, which is a permanent loss of brain function that occurs with certain diseases, including diabetes. It usually affects adults over 55 and can affect the memory, thinking, language, and judgment. So that comes from the coroner's office. So that said that he died of a series of strokes. So he was sick. I mean, the guy was sick, but he was still out there doing concerts. And I've seen current pictures of him, and I'm telling myself the guy should retire. He should, you know, because I was hearing that one of his concerts, they were booing him because he, you know, the show wasn't that good because of his, you know, problem, his diseases and stuff like that. But he just loved music. He wanted to stay on the road. He just loved playing. He loved entertaining people. He loved being out there. So, and in his mind, he was going to die on stage. And basically, he practically did, you know. So he was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes years ago. And from my thinking, I think he probably should have done like Eric Clapton, was retire from the road, because the road can be really strenuous on a guy in his 80s, approaching his 90s. You know, you want to kick back. You can't do it forever. You have to retire. Your body's going to tell you to retire. You can't do this. But he kept trying to do it. I mean, he really wanted to be out there. And, you know, we have lost a lot of people. And one of the things is I think that B.B. King, the death of B.B. King, as sad as it is, and a lot of us, you know, are mourning, it has put the focus back on this kind of music. Because blues was dying. Let's be real about it. It was dying. Jazz was dying. When I say these two genres of music are dying, I mean, you didn't hear them on the radio anymore. Only thing you saw on television was American Idol, The Voice, you know, all of these other programs, singing programs, young people. You didn't hear anything about music. I'm pretty sure they're going to have some sort of music awards, and they're going to honor B.B. King. But they should have done this before he passed away, you know. But that's great. It's still great. But I wish they'd have thought about honoring him and other blues legends and other jazz legends. Music is music, okay? Who are they honoring now? Kanye West, Beyonce, Miley Cyrus, Taylor Swift. I mean, these people can't touch people like B.B. King, John Coltrane. You know, some jazz people, Louis Armstrong. These people can't touch these people. B.B. King. We've lost a lot of people. We've lost James Brown. We've lost Wilson Pickett. We lost Luther Vandross. We've lost Marvin Gaye. We've lost Ray Charles. We've lost Barry White. We've lost Frank Sinatra. Levi Stubbs of the Four Tops. We've just lost Benny King. So far now, we've lost two kings. B.B. King and Benny King. Benny King is the guy who was responsible for Stand By Me. Hey, we recently lost Percy Sledge, the guy who did When a Man Loves a Woman. Michael Jackson, Muddy Waters, Howling Wolf. I could go on and on and on. We've lost a lot of great people. But you know what? Their music is still available. It's still out there. Jackie Wilson, we've lost a lot of people. Dick Clark, we've lost so many people. Mary Wells, I can go on and on and gone. And David Ruffin, the Temptations, the original Temptations, okay? There's been 1,000 Temptations, but the original ones. We've lost a lot of people. But their music is still here. They may not be here, but their music is still here. So we have to be grateful for that. We have to be grateful for that. We've lost a lot of people, but we still have their music. And that's the one of the greatest things. Okay, but no one could play the blues like B.B. King, who died Thursday night at the age of 89 in Las Vegas. He was in Las Vegas. That tells you that he was still thinking about going on stage. I mean, when he was on stage, he just sat down on a chair and he just played his guitar. I remember when he didn't need a chair or a wheelchair and he stood up on both his legs and played and sang "The Thrill Is Gone." We're going to miss this guy. We're going to miss him, you know. All right, he was 89 in Las Vegas, where he has been in hospice care. To me, hospice care is just giving you a nice send-off. You're going to die, so we might as well do everything we can to make it comfortable for you, because you're going to die. That's all that is. That's all that does. That's all it means to me, okay? Although he kept performing well into his 80s, the 15-time Grammy winner suffered from diabetes and other problems. He collapsed during a concert in Chicago last October, later blaming it on dehydration and exhaustion. If that's the case, then all that's telling me that he was tired. I mean, in your 80s, I mean, you should probably retire, you know. But music was so much in his veins that he couldn't do it, because he's been doing it since teenager or something. For generations of blues musicians and rock and roll, his King planted vocals and soaring guitar playing style set the standards for the art form born in the American South and honored and performed worldwide. That means that he learned how to play in the South and he took it worldwide, all over, everywhere. And people loved him. People really loved him. Other musicians loved him. And his style was unusual. King didn't like to sing and play at the same time, so he developed a call and response, let Lucille do some of the talking. You know, I talked about that in one of my books, about when I first joined my band. I had a problem singing and playing, but usually, if you read the book, it all worked itself out. So, it really did. But I'm here to honor B.B. King, okay? And so the show's format kind of changed a little bit, but it's still the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I'm still recording and broadcasting from Chicago. And right now, we're talking about B.B. King, and my understanding, we have a new author. Tamla Hutton will be a special guest on the show. She should be calling in a few minutes. Hang in there. She's coming. And this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. I'm going to take a nice break here. I shall be back. Here we go. All right. Hey, this is George Wilder Jr., your radio host here. If you are an avid reader, or you just love to read in general, check out my Amazon page at www.amazon.com/author/G Wilder, or pull up the Amazon website and check out all the material that I have produced. Or you can go to Amazon in general and just type my name into the space bar above, and all of my material should materialize right in front of your eyes. Wow. Some of the stuff that you can download and check out, Ain't That a Groove? It's Action, Romance, Back in the Groove, Action, Romance, Echoes of My Sin, My Autobiography, I Got Stung, and a lot of others that you can check out too. I do essays, novels, short stories, and I think I do a good job at them. And you can always go and check those things out and give me some feedback. You know, hook me up with some feedback. I'm always looking for feedback on anything that I do, even on the radio show. Give me feedback on the radio show. What do you think about the radio show? Okay, I got to get back to the radio show. Speaking of radio show, I got to get back. All right. Well, then get back.
Hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Thank you for that introduction. It's always get my juices going every time I hear it. And like I said before, it is so beautiful in the city of Chicago today. It is so wonderful. Everybody's finally shedding those coats and sweaters and getting out here in their t-shirts and shorts. That's wonderful. And I'm near the lake. Actually, I'm almost on the lake. I'm in my studio, and I'm looking out on the avenue, and it's wonderful. It is wonderful. It feels like more like summer than spring, you know, and that's the way it's been feeling for years now. So, but we will accept it. Okay, I see I have a caller on the line. Let me go check out and see who it is. I may have a good guess about who this is on the line. Let me check it out. All right, here we go. Bingo. You're on live with George Wilder Jr.
Hi, George. This is Tamala Hutton. How are
you
today?
Hey, how's it going? I'm okay. Tamala Hutton?
Yes, sir. It's me.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. You know, I have your name here. So, how are things going? How's the weather in your town?
The weather is pretty beautiful today. We had a little bit of showers, but we needed them. And right now, it's very beautiful out.
Same here. It's very beautiful out. Every people out there, I have a good positive attitude, and everything is going to go fine. Because usually here, it's raining and gray and cloudy, cold, even though it's supposed to be springtime. So
I have a beautiful view of the swimming pool that they're going to be opening next Friday. Mm-hmm. So
wow,
I can't ask for a better picture right now.
You sure can't. Okay, let me read something in your biography that you have. Okay, this is author Tamala Hutton. She lives in Kentucky with her cat Boo and her sister and her husband. She mainly writes short stories. She loves to write and hopes one day to write a bestseller. You got one. She always dreamed of writing a bestseller. She's always dreamed of writing a book, but in any genre. She always keeps a Kindle with her, constantly reading. She has lots of ideas in her head and loves to garden and spend summers at the pool, thinking up ideas for more books. Kindle is always with her in the event ideas pop up in her head so she can always write them down using her notebook. She loves to take walks, and she likes to clear her head. It clears her head. Okay, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How did that sound?
That sounded good.
Okay. All right, no problem. So can you tell us something about yourself and about the book?
Well, the name of the book
that
is
I didn't just say.
A Life Unencumbered, and it's about people that have survived a pandemic, a worldwide pandemic. I've always been interested in survivalist skills, and that's what made me write this book. So it's about the survivors of a pandemic and the trials and tribulations that they go through just trying to survive on a daily basis. It's not only the environment they have to survive, but it's other people that they have to think about surviving to also.
Okay, let me share a review of this particular book, okay?
Okay.
Okay, this book was obviously a labor of love for the author, and the story must have been stuck in her head for quite some time. There is plenty of action, and the violence was surprisingly hardcore in parts, but the overall story of surviving and living each day to the full is really shown at the end. Three characters go through the ringer and suffer unimaginable losses, both from the initial flu and betrayals and hurts life throws at them along the way. The story is told alternating the first person, which can sometimes be confusing, but the author does a good job at keeping the reader clear on who is who and what is what. I enjoyed this book and look forward to more from this author. Okay.
That's a good review. Thank you for reading that one.
No problem. Okay. How did you come on the book?
What was that?
I said, how did you come up on writing this? What made you write the book?
Well, I've always wanted to write a book. I've always had the idea in my head. And one day just decided that was the day and sat down in front of my computer and started writing, and it just poured out of me. And I just kept writing and It just poured out of me.
What do you mean by an unencumbered life?
An unencumbered life is a life that's free of difficulties, free of trials and tribulations. And at the end of the book, that's what they get. That's what they finally achieve. Is a life unencumbered. After all the things that they go through, they finally achieve that life unencumbered.
Did you get a lot of encouragement from other people to write the book after you finished it?
I did. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of praise from my family and from my friends and from a lot of people on Facebook. It was very heartwarming. Very heartwarming how much help or praise I got for writing this.
And you know what? That positiveness will just make you want to keep on writing. As you go forth from. Yeah, it'll make you keep on writing as you go forth to becoming a writer. You know. Are any of the characters in this particular book based on people in real life?
Yes, the main character Anna is a lot like me. She's a hermit, and I'm a hermit by nature. She's a hoarder.
Okay.
She likes to have excess food and water around at all times, and I've always been that same way. I always worry about, what if something drastic happens? Do I have enough food and water on hand to last me at least a week? The male character is based upon a friend of mine, And then some of the other characters are based on people I know. And, of course, the cat in the book is based upon my sweet little boo-boo, my cat.
Wow, that's great. I hope you changed everybody's name.
I did. And I changed them enough to where they don't really know who's who.
But you know what? That's not always correct. I mean, if someone reads your book and they find out, you know, if they know you, you know them, and they read your book, and it's a character in that book just like them, they're going to figure that character is, you know. What are you writing about me?
Around.
That's me.
Yeah. I changed them around enough to that where they can't quite pick themselves out, I think. But I've
had a few people tell me.
Yeah, I've had a few people tell me, though, that they can pick me out in the main character.
I know. I wrote a book once, and everybody was like, oh, that's me, George. That's me. That's me. Yeah. I said, your name is not in the book anywhere. But a lot of times we do base characters on real people. Because, you know, you can't write necessarily, write what you know, and
right.
And that's basically, yeah, write what you know, but sometimes fiction can be, go ahead.
Real life always finds a way into the story.
Exactly, and just about every fiction book I've done, there's something real is inside of, even though I'm calling it fiction. You know, something
right.
real is happening. You know,
exactly.
So, go ahead. All right, do you have an excerpt of the book?
I have an excerpt that I could read if you'd like me to. Do we have time
sure.
for
go
that?
Yeah, sure, go right ahead. We have a lot of time.
Okay, let me get to that.
Just don't give too much away of the book. Yeah.
Oh, I won't. This excerpt is... based on Anna's first trip out after she finds out about the flu. She's been on vacation for 3 weeks. She's a hermit. She's stayed at home. She hasn't been watching TV. She's been binging on horror movies on Netflix, hasn't been watching the news, and she had no idea what was going on until that morning she got up, had to go back to work, and turned on the news, and the emergency broadcast system was on. So she really didn't know what was going on until that morning.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea how bad things were. So this is about her first trip out to get some supplies.
Okay.
After showering and slipping on some clean clothes, I went in and completed my inventory of what I already had. My list of needs was small, but I knew that regardless of the size of the list, the risk was huge. I just wasn't sure if this area was safe. I knew I was wasting time. It was time to just go and get it over with. A half hour later, I was on the road heading towards Kroger's and the hardware store, with maybe a stop at the liquor store and the pharmacy along the way. It would be a good idea to stock up on some antibiotics and pain medicine just in case, and liquor made a good antiseptic. Pulling into Kroger's lot, the first thing I noticed was a multitude of abandoned cars, some with their doors hanging open. I didn't see any people, not a soul. Where the heck were all the people that belonged to these cars? I figured that once I got there, I might need to pry the automatic doors open, but as I walked up, they opened right up. The smell, oh God, the smell was overwhelming. Tears came to my eyes, and I held back the bile in my throat. I barely nearly ran from those doors, seeking clean air to breathe. I knew I had to go in there, but the smell was enough to kill anyone. I walked back to my car and grabbed a sweatshirt out of the trunk and wrapped it around my face to cover my nose and mouth. I walked back through those doors, praying this would help diffuse some of the stench. Another disappointment. The sweatshirt did very little to block the smell. With eyes watering and stomach turning, I grabbed a cart and started walking the aisles, filling my cart with anything and everything that would keep without electricity. So far, I had not come across a single body, so so I couldn't understand that strong smell. I turned the corner and entered the next aisle, only to see the pharmacy waiting area directly ahead of me. Bodies. Oh, my God, all those bodies. It seemed like 100 bodies all crammed in that waiting area. Dead, all dead. Visiting the pharmacy at the end, hoping for a remedy. The sight of all those bloated and bruised bodies cost me what little was in my stomach. The spasms in my rolling stomach nearly took me to my knees as vomit spewed all over the floor in front of me. Oh, my God, how am I ever going to get through all of that and behind the pharmacy counter, I asked myself. Towards the end, it looked like some of the people had charged the counter. They were piled up 3 deep right at the counter. I would have to crawl over that heap if I couldn't find another entrance. You ask why I would even think of doing that? Well, because when the world crashes down around you, you need to think of what you may need as far as first aid in order to survive a cut, an infection, or even a broken bone. Doctors were going to be few and far between if any at all survived. A small cut could kill you if it got infected. Infection was a thing to be feared. I needed to grab as many antibiotics, salves, and pain medicine as I could, then hit the aisle where all the first aid items were. Steeling myself against the horror, I started working my way up the aisle, looking for another entrance to the back pharmacy area. As I reached the top of the aisle, I heard giggling ahead of me. It sounded like it was coming from behind that counter. I abandoned the cart, grabbed a rifle that was slung over my shoulder, and edged up to try to peek over the counter. Not what I expected. There were 3 teenagers sitting on the floor, surrounded by open bottles and spilt pills, 2 boys and a young girl, none of them looking over 15 at the most. It was evident they were having a pill party. Hello, I thought I was alone here. What are you kids up to? I asked. The answering laughs sent a chill up my spine. You could hear a tinge of insanity in those laughs. One of the teenagers stood up swaying and grabbed one of the shelves to hold him up. This is ours. Mm-hmm. Get out, he yelled at me with spittle flying. I edged back out of their view and started looking for another entrance. There had to be another door into the back. Those kids did not look like they had crawled over all of those dead bodies. Their jeans were still fairly clean, and there was no way that would be the case if they had climbed over those seeping, oozing bodies. I walked down 2 aisles and was blessed with an open window leading into the pharmacy area. Grabbing hold of the window jamb, I hefted myself up onto the window's counter, ready to swing my legs over and drop down into the pharmacy. As I swung my feet around and my body followed, I found myself face to face with the teen that had yelled at me. I told you to get out, he screamed, brandishing a large metal pipe in his hands. I saw that pipe swinging around, and I knew if I didn't do something quick, it was going to bash me in the head. I dove off the counter and rolled across the floor, trying to gain my footing. I looked up in time to see the pipe swinging in an arc towards my head. No amount of antibiotics was going to help a bashed-in skull. I dove to the left, crashing my shoulder into one of the shelving units, almost toppling it over. I looked up in time to see the pipe swinging forward towards my head again and did the only thing I could. I swung the barrel of the rifle around and fired point-blank into his chest, sending him flying into one of the far shelves. The shelf came down on top of his lifeless, bleeding body, sending pill bottles flying. What have you done? You killed my Charlie. I'll kill you, the female yelled as she rose up from the floor and looked ready to charge at me. I swung the rifle around, pointing it at her chest. Stop right there. I don't want to kill you, but I will if you don't stay back. Please don't make me do that. Please, I said. The young girl didn't pay any attention to my words. Looking like a mad rhino, she charged at me, letting loose a high screeching yell that went through my every nerve. I don't remember doing it, but I pulled the trigger. The force of the shot propelled the girl across the room and into the far counter, making a loud crack when her head hit the counter edge. I immediately swung the rifle in the direction of the third boy, only to see him scrambling to pick up pills and crawling into the far corner, hands up over his head.
Wow.
Please don't kill me. We were only partying. We didn't do nothing wrong, lady. Please. I'm not going to kill you. I didn't want to kill them. They gave me no choice.
Pamela.
They were both going to kill me. Yes? They were both going to kill me.
Don't give too much of a...
Just stay there out of my way and I'll be gone soon. He worked his way a little farther into the corner and put his face in his hands and started to cry. I picked up pill bottles as fast as I could, stuffing them in my shirt and jumped over the side of the counter, grabbed the cart and ran out of the shopping center as fast as I could.
Pamela?
Yes?
Don't give too much of it away.
I've got about one more minute.
You're riveting. You want to leave something? Huh?
I'm almost done.
Are you almost done?
I'm almost done.
Okay, keep on. Okay, go ahead.
I ran out of that grocery store as fast as I could, and I got to my car and threw everything into the car and looked back, and at the front door stood the lone, sniveling, surviving teenager, watching me like a hawk. I got in the car, and after sitting there for about a half an hour crying my eyes out, I did what I do best. I pulled myself together, told myself I had no choice, and I drove up the street to the hardware store. And that's it.
Wow, that was great. That was very, very good. I mean, I've already bought the book. I've already downloaded it.
Oh,
and,
well, good.
Yeah. I mean, I try to do it, you know, so I can, you know, get an upper hand. But, you know, that was great. That was good. That was riveting. It was dramatic, you know, and that's what, you know, readers want. They want something dramatic. The way you were reading it, it was like engrossing. So by it being engrossing, I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people out there who are listening and who have seen the advertisements. They will go pick this book up.
Well, I hope they do, because I did pour my heart and soul into this book.
You just poured your heart and soul into that excerpt also. It was great. I mean, you let yourself just immerse yourself into that story, the story that you have created.
Well, thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, if I hear or see good work, I always, you know, say something positive about it. You know, I think it was great. I think it was wonderful. I think the excerpt is going to get people to check this book out. This is your third book or your first book, or you have three books?
This is my first book, but I have three other short stories that I have published since then, and I am now working on a young adult series. So I have four more books published now, and starting on a young adult series.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So what made you want to talk about this particular book over those other three?
The other three are short stories.
Okay. All right.
They're just about 25 to 30 pages long. They're just short stories. This book, I poured a year of my life into, and it took everything out of me to get this written, and it means so much to me. And that's why I wanted to concentrate on this book tonight, because it does mean so much to me.
All right, don't give up on it, okay? I mean, after this show, do other shows, okay?
Because I will.
You're going to reach different kinds of audience, and I think it's a good book, and I think it's a good book for any radio show that hosts books like your book. I have a question here I want to ask you.
Okay.
How would you deal with a negative review? How do you deal with it? What do you think about a negative review?
Well, you're always going to get negative reviews, and I have gotten a couple of negative reviews.
I think some of us.
I take it with a grain of salt. I try to learn from it. I've had two people tell me that I treated violence against women as tolerable, and I did comment back to one person and state that I did not feel I did treat it as tolerable, that in both instances where there was violence against women, the perpetrators were treated justly, they were punished justly for their crimes, and their actions were not tolerated. But, everybody's going to have a different opinion of your book, and
exactly.
You've always got to be prepared for the negative. You've always got to be prepared for a negative review, and you've got to be open enough to take it and to learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like I said before, a lot of us, if you're a writer and you have a plethora of books out there, somebody's going to, not like it or not agree with this, whatever that's in the book. But then again, you got people around the internet that like to go around giving bad reviews because that's what they do, That's what they do. That's what they're about. It doesn't matter how good the book is or how it's put together or the title. These people are just nasty.
I have one of those reviewers on my page. I've actually looked at his past reviews and noticed that he has never given anything higher than 2 stars to anybody. Took it with a grain of salt and moved on.
Right, because, you may get 1 or 2 stars here, but someone else may give you a 5-star review. So, I take them with a grain of salt, too. But, if I get too many negative reviews, then I'll go back and take a look at my script and see what.
Right.
And there's a lot of times I'll go back and take a look at it, and there's nothing wrong. And I'll say, hey, wow, negative reviews can kill a book if you get too many of them.
Yes, they can.
Regardless, because someone just checking out a book, the first thing they're going to do is take a look at reviews, But you have to keep an open mind when you're doing a read. Because I've read many a book with 2 or 3 stars, and I just gave them 5 stars because I'm also a book reviewer, and I have reviewed books before. And when I review a book, I never give anybody a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star. I want to give out 4- and 5-star reviews. If I can't give out a 4- or 5-star review, I'd contact the author and say, hey, take another look at your book because I want you to sell your book. I want to give you a good review, because I don't like that.
It's funny you say that because I do the same thing. I don't like to leave a 3-star or lower. I will usually contact the author and tell them, hey, check your editing or check your grammar or, whatever else may have been the issue, and I won't leave a review.
No, I won't leave a review either, and I'll tell them to check it out. And most of the time, some of them, they will go back and check their work. And I will review it again, and hey, I'll give them a better rating this time than I did last time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you talk about some of your upcoming projects? I know you kind of touched on it, but can you kind of, reiterate?
Right now I'm writing a young adult series that is about a young girl that just turned 16, and she has just found out that she is a witch. She is just starting to get her powers. And her mother she went to her mother and you know, told her mother, hey, wow, Mom, something's going on here. I was able to move a book today without trying, and I'm hearing voices. I'm hearing, like, people's thoughts in my head, and I'm going crazy or something. And her mother, you know, has explained to her, well, no, it's, you come from a long line of witches, and you are now coming into your powers, and this is part of your powers, and I will help you learn how to control them, and as you get older, you will get more powers, and I will continue to teach you how to control them and use them. And it's geared for the young audience, mainly. You know, something clean and fun for them to read.
Something clean. Okay.
Yes.
There's thousands and thousands of books being published every year. How would you make your book stand out over all of those books?
That's a hard one. That's a hard question because there are so many books, and because it is so easy to publish nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
I just want to
make. How would you make your book?
I want to make mine special by making it.
Mm-hmm.
A good, clean book that young teenagers can read, that their parents won't worry about them reading. They'll feel confident in them reading the books and maybe learning a lesson or two from them. They won't worry about them reading these books. There won't be any bad language in them. There won't be any sex in them. Any hints of sex in them. Just young and wholesome, and like I said, maybe learn a couple of life lessons in them.
Okay.
That's all I can hope, that maybe mine will stand out more than somebody else's.
All you had to do was say, my book will stand out because mine's the best. you want to
think
of yourself.
There you go. There you go.
You want to think of your book as being the best. My book is better than that book. My book is better than that book. Buy my book. Leave those books alone.
That's what I'm trying for.
You have to be positive. You have to be upbeat. And you have to believe in what you are writing in order for other people to believe in it.
Yes,
I mean,
you do.
I have people come on the show. You know, I say, how are you going to get your word out about your book over the other books they don't know? And I have to tell them, think of yourself as being the best. Tell people you're writing and why. I think it's a great story. I think it's a wonderful story. I think it's an engrossing story. You could say things like that. You know, you have to let, because you're competing for a dollar, and all those other books are also competing for that same dollar. You have to show that person why they should buy your book.
Right.
You know, and just say it's the best book. You know, because you've done it. Every author, I believe, thinks that their work is better than anybody else's, or they should think that way.
They should think,
you know,
that
and
way,
I think,
yeah.
There's
no
yeah,
use
I mean,
in
you,
writing
you,
it.
Right. No
there's
use
no
in putting yourself down.
There's no use in writing
Hello?
It if you
there?
Don't think it's the best.
Right, and there's no use in writing it if you don't want to publicize it or get the word out about it. It's a waste of time.
Right.
And I have authors on the show that don't want to publicize their book. They don't want to talk about it. Then why in the hell you wrote it? You know?
Right.
So always think of yourself as when somebody says, whose book is the best, how are you going to get the word out? You know, you're going to get the word out through Facebook and all these other social websites, but you can always say your book is better than their book. And you're gonna give a reason why.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you have any advice for aspiring writers that you can share? What would you say to other writers who want to become published authors?
Never give up. Even if you put that book aside for 6 months and don't write for 6 months, don't give up on it. Just never give up. I had a 6-month dry spell on my first book, and didn't write a word, and then went right back to it, picked it up, and finished it within 2 months. Just never, ever give up on that idea.
I think that's the number one answer, never give up.
Yeah, you can make it through a dry spell. Anybody, everybody can make it through a dry spell. Just never give up. Just keep going back and rereading what you wrote. And before you know it, the ideas will come to you and it'll flow and you'll finish it.
When you say dry spell, are you talking about writer's block?
Writer's block, yes. I went through a 6-month writer's block on this book, and then just it just came to me, and I sat down and finished it within 2 months, and just knocked it out in
two months.
Yeah.
2 months. How many? How many pages? I think.
In 2 months' time, I did over 80,000 words.
Whoa.
I crunched it out. It's all
because
I did
it
for 2 months.
Because it usually take me to do 80 to 100,000. I mean, almost a year.
It took me a good year to finish the book. Even with that dry spell, it took me a good year to finish the book.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds great. And if people were, which I know they are, if people are looking for your book, where would they go to find it?
That's on Amazon.com. It's on CreateSpace. It's on createspace.com. And those are the two places that they can find it. It's in paperback form or Kindle format.
Okay, can they find it at a Barnes & Noble or something like that? Or is it Amazon?
Just on Amazon. Yeah, I haven't been able to get Barnes & Noble to pick it up yet. I'm still working on them.
Okay, no problem. So they just go to the Amazon website, type your name up in there, and just, you know, and your book will pop up.
And my books will pop up, yes.
Okay, Amazon.com. Do you have a website? Do you have a Amazon page or that you can give out? Or
I have an author's page under T.J. Hutton.
Okay. An author
and
page under
all of my
T.
books
J.
are
Hutton.
Listed on there.
Website, blog?
I don't have one yet. I'm thinking about creating one, though.
Okay. You've been a great guest. You've been wonderful. I'm proud to have you, to have had you on the show. It's great. You can come back and talk about your next book once it's published.
Thank you so much.
This
has been so much fun.
I loved your excerpt. I thought it was powerful. I thought you were dramatic, and I thought you were real. I thought you immersed yourself into the story, just like you've immersed yourself when you finally completed the book. Okay, one more question. What else would you like to say? Okay, let me start again. What else would you like to say about this book? What else would you like for people out there who are listening right now know about you and this book?
Let's see, that no matter what trials and tribulations that these people went through, they always got through everything by working together, and it had a happy ending. I made sure it ended with a happy ending.
Okay, all right.
And very, all right. Very uplifting ending.
I think it's a great book, and I think people should go out and get it. It's available on Amazon.com. The author is Tamla Hutton. This is her third book. She's working on her fourth book. Check her out. Support her. And, Tamla, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, George. I really loved it.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, that was the author, Tamla Hutton, on the show. She was great. She was wonderful. George is going to take a break right now. I will be right back. Here we go. Can we cue it up? There it is. Hey, this is George Wilder Jr., your radio host here. If you are an avid reader, or you just love to read in general, check out my Amazon page at www.amazon.com/author/G Wilder, or pull up the Amazon website and check out all the material that I have produced. Or you can go to Amazon in general and just type my name into the space bar above, and all of my material should materialize right in front of your eyes. Wow. Some of the stuff that you can download and check out, Ain't That a Groove? It's action, romance, Back in the Groove, action, romance, Echoes of My Sin, my autobiography, I Got Stung, and a lot of others that you can check out too. I do essays, novels, short stories, and I think I do a good job at them. And you can always go and check those things out and give me some feedback. You know, hook me up with some feedback. I'm always looking for feedback on anything that I do, even on the radio show. Give me feedback on the radio show. What do you think about the radio show? Okay, I got to get back to the radio show. Speaking of radio show, I got to get back. All right.
Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
It's still 7:13. I believe it's around 68 or 69 degrees near the lake. I'm pretty sure it's a lot warmer out west and out south from me. I'm on the east side, practically on the east-west side of Chicago. I'm in my studio broadcasting live from Chicago. Thanks everybody for listening. I hope you're still there. I hope you didn't leave me after the author left the show. But anyway, stick with me because I have a lot to talk about. But basically, like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm dwelling in and out on the death of B.B. King because it is such a stunner. It's not like some of us didn't know that it was going to happen, but reading here that he had dementia, which is a permanent loss of brain function that occurs with certain diseases. And we all know, most of us knew that he had type 2 diabetes. And the coroner is saying that that he had a few strokes from reduced blood flow to the because of chronic diabetes. And unhealthy fluctuation in blood sugar levels, if I can read this correctly. Oh, wow. This has been fun. I loved it. It's been fun. I can't thank my guest as much as I should thank her for being on the show, making herself a part of the show, participating, and with her wonderful book. You know, there are some negative reviews on the book. There's no doubt about that. But you have to judge for yourself. You have to go judge for yourself. And if you see something, you know, I mean, judge for yourself. I mean, I have a couple of negative reviews on my books also, but, you know, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to think the same, you know. So, you know, check her book out. I mean, if you see something negative on it, yeah, I mean, that's up to you, you know. But check her book out. She's a great person. She's a great reader. She's a great everything. One of the best people I've ever had on the show, you know, so far. And I knew nothing about her until she contacted me to be on the show, and that was wonderful. That was really wonderful. Okay, we're talking about B.B. King. A lot of the things on the screen here is domestic abuse on the rise. I'm going to talk about that in another show. We had a guest, so I could not, you know, espouse a lot of things. Obama loses on TPP. That was about 2 weeks ago, a week ago or so. So that's kind of old news, but it's great news. It's good news. It's good for news for America, working people. Knowledge is power. There's no doubt about that. Knowledge is power. The more you know, the further you're going to go. And it doesn't matter the economy. People like people who are smart. People gravitate to people who are successful. People gravitate to people who can teach and show them things, especially things that they can take throughout their life to make them successful. You know, so knowledge is power. Bernie Sanders is America. And you know what? This is a good one. This is a good one. I think we should all get behind. If you are a progressive, if you're independent, even if you're a Democrat, hold your nose and say, I'm a Democrat. You should support this guy. This is a wonderful man. I was listening to him on a radio talk show earlier today. He was great. Tom Hartman show. I just love listening to Tom Hartman. I think he's one of the smartest guys in the world. I look up to Tom Hartman. I want to be like Tom Hartman. He's a great radio show. And his guest was Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is all about the people. Bernie Sanders is a socialist. Socialist is not a nasty word like the Republicans want you to think that it's a nasty word. It's not a nasty word. Let's all get behind Bernie Sanders for president of the United States in 2016. Can we do that? Will we do that? We have to get up off the couch. We have to stop watching Fox News. I probably shouldn't even mention that because that's not going to happen. But people know what's happening to them. Their pensions are being messed up. Social Security might not be here. From what I'm hearing, Social Security will be solvent for the next 18 years. But the Republicans are not going to tell you that. They think Social Security is one of a monster on society. And it will be solvent. It's going to run out. You know why I think Social Security is going to run out? They're not making enough money to put into the program. People are not working. People are saying, well, economy is great. People have jobs. They're working. Of course, they're working part-time jobs, minimum wage jobs. And when you're working a minimum wage job, you're not paying little or nothing into Social Security. Social Security is going to be insolvent in maybe 20 years, 18 to 20 years, because people are not working long enough or making enough money to put into the program. So they can, you know, get it when they're older and when they need to retire. And the thing about it, the Republicans are thinking about raising the retirement age to 70. You know, so a lot of people take Social Security at 62, 63, 64, not because they want to, it's because they have to. Their economic position in life causes them to take the money earlier, bypassing taking it later, in which they would get their checks would be bigger, you know. But a lot of people have to do what they have to do. You can't, you know, fault a person for taking Social Security at the age of 62, and that's the reason why there's so many people taking it at the age of 62, and that is the reason why the Republicans want to raise the age to 70. They don't like it. They don't like nothing. Anything that's good for America, they don't like. They were with Obama on this TPP thing. They were all for it. And I've always said, if the Republicans like it, it's definitely not for America, you know. And I have something down here, do dark-skinned people have a lower IQ than others? I saw that in a – it was an article I saw that in, and I thought it was interesting. And I said to myself, I need to talk about this on the show. Maybe I can get some people to call in to chime in on this, and we can have a good discussion on do dark-skinned people have a lower IQ than others. I think there's a lot of people out here that their IQs. It doesn't matter what color you are. If you're stupid, you're stupid, you know. So that can be debatable. That can be debatable, you know. Basically, it's saying black people dumber than white people? That's all this is saying. And any way you go, it would be unfair to say that. I don't think, no way do I think black people are smarter than white people. I don't think white people are smarter than black people. But it's a topic to be discussed. It's a topic to be debated. You know, so of all the topics in this group, the one I like the most is Bernie Sanders is America. And he is. He is totally America. Please don't go out there and vote for Hillary Clinton. She's corporate. The Republicans will eat her alive. Bernie Sanders is strong. He's going to stand up for you. We've had Hillary Clinton in the White House for two terms, back in 1992, 1994, and on and on and on, I think to 1997 or 1998. She was in the White House for 8 years, two terms. And all she did was buckle under the Republicans, take money from questionable sources, you know, and get up there. I don't think she's strong enough, you know. And she's done some questionable things. She's worked against America. I really don't want to see Bill Clinton in the White House. He thinks he's going back. I think she had a better chance when Obama was running, but Obama knocked her out. And I actually think she probably would have made a better president back in 2008 than Obama has now. Obama hoodwinked us all. I mean, he hoodwinked us all. Let me say this. There are some nice things he's done, but there's some things he could have done better, and there's some things he just could have done, period. You know, but, you know, once he's out of – I mean, someone wrote in an article that Obama just don't give a F, and I believed it. I don't think he cares about anything anymore. What he's trying to do now is to do things for his legacy. Legacy meaning he wants to do something great so we will all remember him by it 10 or 20 years from now. But he's done exactly nothing for me, you know. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think his wife has more guts than he does. But, you know, even though I think she does, she said recently that she wouldn't run for office for nothing in the world. She says she gets hurt by what people say about her. And I've said in a previous show, I mean, get out of the kitchen if you can't stand the heat. Why did you run for office? Why did you run for president? Why did you tell him to run for – I mean, this is a – politics is a dirty, nasty, filthy, low-down game. It is. And you have to know that if you're entering it, if you're entering any parts of politics, it is – lies, it's unfair, and you should know that. But most people enter politics to do one thing, and that's to get rich. Because when Bill and Hillary left the president office, and I believe in 97, 98, they were flat broke. They didn't have any money. But now they're on the edge of, I'm thinking, to being billionaires. You know, so nobody really gets in the politician politics to really do anything for the people. They get in to be rich. They get in to take care of their own families. They're there to get rich and take care of their own family and tell us to blow off or something, you know. But this is George Wilder Jr. If I can say it, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Chicago and Chicago. I'm looking at 7:25 straight up on my clock. It is still daylight out, but it's getting dark, and it's still beautiful. It's still warm. It's still wonderful. It is so wonderful. And I am so glad that we had B.B. King, because I think I said at the beginning of the show, his death is sad, but one of the things he's done, he's put a light on the blues. The blues is back. Let's hope we can bring jazz back. These are two beautiful genres of music that has been stifled by American Idol, The Voice, The X Factor, all of these television shows with these young people with competing against each other for stardom. You don't see on these shows like X Factor and American Idol, you don't see anybody on there playing the blues. You don't see people on there singing the blues. They don't want that. You don't see jazz players. You know, I mean, when you're playing an instrument, that's talent. Playing an instrument, that's talent. Singing, okay, talent. But on shows like The X Factor, American Idol, The Voice, there's nobody on there singing jazz. There's nobody on there singing the blues. But we do have jazz players and blues players throughout the United States, and they're going to be here forever. So why not showcase these people? Why push jazz away? Why push blues away? They're now saying that rock and roll is dead. Why push all of these great genres of music away? Pop music, I think they're saying that that's dead. As long to me it is. I mean, I'm not a fan of Miley Cyrus. I think she doesn't have any talent. I think she's just a little freaky little woman. That's and Beyonce and Jennifer Lopez, all they do is get on stage and shake their butts in front of everybody and in front of the world and call it music. And so many young people go out there and buy their music and make them famous. If there is Motown music, I love Motown music. I think Motown music is better than what they're making today. Rap music, I can deal with some rap music, but, you know, depends on, it has to be tasteful. I can't deal with that stuff that calling women. I can't deal with that music calling women bitches. I can't deal with that. Or sexual connotations of rap songs. Okay, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I'm George Wilder Jr., and I'm broadcasting live from Chicago. I'm just about off the air. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. I don't have a guest tomorrow at this point, but who knows what can happen. So I would like to thank my author, Tamela Hutton, for being on the show. I told her to come back when she gets a new book, and she was great. She was wonderful, and there's some negative reviews of her book. I've seen them. But you go check it out, and you know, you've heard her on the show. You heard the excerpt. Is it fair to give her one or two stars? Book, she's got three or four for the same book. But, you know, you check it out for yourself. Check her out. She's a great person. She's a wonderful person. I love her to death, even though I just met her. I think she's going to go places, and the only way she's going to go places is that you go out there and you help her. This show is all about This show is all about authors supporting authors. We're all writers. We're all brothers and sisters. Let's help each other out. Let's help each other out. Let's help each other out. All right. Hey, everyone. This is George Wilder, Jr., author and radio host. Follow me right here on Block Talk Radio and the Wilder Network.
All right.
No topic, like I said before, like I always say, no topic is off limits. Talk about anything you want to talk about within reason. Hey, I love what I'm doing. I love that you're there. I want you to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Google. I think we're off the air, but we're going to...